That she is. So, welcome back to the Proudly New White podcast. You're joined with Lee.
And with Sean. And we've got, an interesting month to talk about.
I mean, there's definitely been some highs and lows in there, haven't there?
You couldn't say it hasn't been a Spursy month, could you?
Oh, I mean, I think if there was a month that you could describe as a month of being Spurs, it's been this last month. Where do you even start with it? I mean, you've had, at times in the month, I've thought top four was a given. At times in the month, I've thought getting any sort of European football is not even going to happen. You've had days where it's been like euphoric to an extent, finally playing some Conte ball and enjoyable to watch the matches again, to wow, this is an absolute drag of a 90 minutes.
As I think was said quite a lot, nothing describes Spurs more accurately, really, or being a Spurs supporter than that run of games where we were, beating Manchester City, losing to Burnley, beating Leeds quite so significantly, and then losing to Middlesbrough. I mean, I think those four games kind of sum it up, really, don't they? Just the games that you expect us to win are the ones that we suffer, and the games that you think we're going to find difficult, we lose. And then we, put in a really good performance against Leeds despite not being able to keep our form. So, I mean, I guess you've got to say it's probably down to still learning and still adapting to Conte's style. But there's been some concern, I guess, over Harry and Sonny and how they've played in the games where we didn't play very well. And they are so crucial to us, aren't they? That if they're not playing, then it's difficult, because if they're not playing well, then it's difficult because the other players don't seem to step up.
Yeah, it's tricky to watch as well, because you don't want to lay all the blame on Harry, but I know some of the quotes that he came out with after the match against Everton, and saying, how some people in the squad need to sort of take responsibility for, trying to get to the top four, and, everyone needs to play their part. And it's difficult because you can't pinpoint everything to Harry, and you can't say, well, you've had a bad couple of games, and, when you've not played well, we've not won. It's sort of not fair to have that pressure on one player. It's a team game. It's a team sport. And, if the team's not firing on all cylinders, you can't expect them to win every match.
Absolutely. You can't rely on two players. And when those two players aren't playing very well, you would expect that the other players would go, okay, well, we'll step up and we'll find a way to do it then, because those players, just by simply being there, are going to have certain presence on the field and going to have a certain impact on the game. So find a way to use that to your advantage and play a different way. As you say, you can't have, no player has a good game every game. And when, you're playing as many games as they are, I mean, I think Sonny's been regularly coming off before the 90 minutes now, I guess, to protect him because of how important he is to us. You can't expect them all to have great games all the time, and other players do need to step up. But it does, I mean, you have to say, though, that there are signs that certain players, are showing more than they have. I mean, Matt Doherty had an excellent game against Everton and starting to, look like the player that we thought we were getting from Wolves. His style of play suits Conte's style of play. Sessegnon starting to show flashes of what he can do, although, of course, I think his confidence is still a little bit low and still needs to be improved on. But there are players coming through, and those, we do need to make sure that everybody's playing their part. What do you make of the new boys?
I mean, isn't it really such a relief that finally we've got two players coming in and they've settled really quickly and they've adapted really quickly and they've hit the ground running? I mean, for instance, we were both at the match against Everton, and Kulusevski had such a brilliant game. Like, I just couldn't take my eyes off him. And not just from a perspective of he was, if you compare him and Benteke in that match. So Kulusevski was the one that had the flair and the skillful turns and the through balls and all of that stuff that we love about Spurs traditionally, and the stuff that we'd love to go and watch, and you know, in the build up to the match about the glory days and the flick and the trick and all of that, Kulusevski embodies that when he plays, and it's so good that he's got 4 goals and assists, I think it is already.
Yeah.
Or is it 5 now? I can't keep track.
and he's only 20, he's only 21, isn't he? So you know, also, I mean, huge future.
You've got him on one hand, and then the other new boy, Bentica. When you see what he's been doing, he's been really solid in the midfield, and he's been keeping everything ticking over and just making those little intricate passes in between the lines and trolling the play, and you know, flashes of Dembele. You know, maybe not quite the ball carrying strength, but in terms of dictating play and keeping us on the front foot, I think he's also been really, really pivotal in matches where we've won. He's always sort of featured in them. So I think the two new boys have really hit the ground running, and they've embedded into the team really well so far. And I'd just like to see that level that they're performing at with our better players now, with maybe some of our rotational and squad players, because when you haven't necessarily got the people around you to be able to feed you into the balls or people on the end of the passes you're making, you don't shine as bright so much yourself. So I'd like to see them be able to pull their teammates up when their teammates are struggling, like we were saying about when Kane and Son weren't maybe firing on all cylinders or having a great match. I'd like to see these sorts of players, you know, who are new, have got the energy and don't have the traditional Spurs mindset of, oh, well, our heads are down when everything's going against us. They are the people who are the breath of fresh air. And I want to see them pull the team more and have that positivity. And, you know, things may be going against you and decisions and whatnot, but you keep playing, you keep sticking to your patterns of play and what you know best. And I think if they could be the people that would do that. You used to see it with Lamella a lot. So Lamella would come on a match where we were absolutely dismal, like, and he would just come on, and in a flash, all of a sudden, he'd be like jumping into challenges and running at defenses, and all of a sudden, there's a this is what we should be playing like. And I think the new boys are doing it really well when we're all performing well. But I just want to see a little bit more. I know that will take time for them to really settle in with that, but I think because they're the breath of fresh air and they're the new kids on the block, I think they've got the opportunity to go, well, this is how I'm playing, everyone else is just, you know, step up your game now, and they can be the ones that challenge the rest of the squad, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see what happens when Skip's fit again, because there seems to be a little bit of an overcrowding in that midfield area with, you know, once he's fit again, and his importance to us in the early part of the season, you know, and potential to be a huge player for us going forwards. Be interesting to see how Conte manages with those three kind of players vying for those places, because you wouldn't want to see Skip losing out completely because of how important he's been to us, and I think, you know, the potential that he has to play for us for many years. And we all love her. We love one of our own, don't we, you know? So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But it's good that Bentico's back fit again, and Romero as well, back fit in the defensive lineup as well. I mean, he made a bit of a rash challenge in the Everton game that got a bit of an applaud from the south stand, but from the north stand, we were all a bit like, "Oh, careful there! We don't need you getting a red card right now."
Yeah. Yeah, it did at the time. It definitely drew one of the bigger applauses, especially at that time in the match as well, when he did that. And again, I can see why fans are applauding it. It's refreshing to see a player going in full hog for a challenge where, you know, they're not going to get it, but they still go all in anyway, and that level of commitment. So I see where the applause come from, but you are right. I was sat up there myself a bit like, oh, that's lucky.
Yes, we don't want to be losing a centre-back right now. Even though, you know, I mean, ultimately, I guess Everton didn't look like they were going to produce much anyway. But
those sorts of matches, that could be a defining moment in the match, and you never know.
But, I mean, great to see Dele back and getting the reception that he deserved. I mean, Andros Townsend got a round of applause when he warmed up, but he never made it onto the pitch. Of course, Dele did come on, and as he was stood on the line waiting to come on, his song rang around the stadium. And then he, after the game, who went over to South Stand with Hugo and got another chance to say goodbye. And I think that was nice for him. I'm worried for him in his performances. I think it's going to take him a while to find his groove again, if he ever does, I think. But nice to see that he got the opportunity to be respected by the Spurs fans.
Yeah, and hopefully that will give him a little bit, not closure, that's not the right word, but it sort of, you know, anything that maybe was overhanging with him and he was maybe not fully settled because he didn't feel like he got the chance to sort of say goodbye and hadn't really moved on per se. And I think, you know, we gave him the opportunity now. So now's his time to go and flourish in his new adventure. And, you know, we always will wish him all the best at Everton. And for his sake, I do hope that Everton can muster up a bit of form and you know, stay in the league. But obviously, you know, you need to be able to pick yourself up. And he's had to do it a fair few times at Spurs after some horrible performances and some not great results. But, you know, there have been times when he has picked himself up and he's dragged Spurs through matches before, almost single-handedly at times. And I don't doubt that he'd be able to do that for Everton if he can just, you know, find a little bit of form again and pick himself up.
How crazy is it, though, that we're talking about Everton maybe getting relegated? I mean, that's huge, isn't it? I mean, huge club like Everton, and you're talking, and all the kind of, you know, not, it wasn't that many seasons ago. Everybody was quite, I think, you know, Everton fans I know were quite buoyant about their prospects and how they were moving on up and doing really well. And then this season, it just seems to have all fallen apart for them. Mm-hmm.
It reminds me a little bit. You remember back when Manchester City, when they first started buying all their star players, and they had that season or two where it just didn't gel at all. And it was a squad full of stars who couldn't play together. They couldn't string a pass together. I remember watching them thinking, well, sure, they're not being able to perform now, but if you have enough quality in your squad, and they're given the time and the and good coaching, they will perform. Their time will come. And sure enough, two seasons later, City were then started to go on their massive runs of form and started winning left, right, and centre. So, you know, if Everton can stay in the Premier League, which I think they've got the quality in there to do it, and I'd like to see them in the Premier League. You know, they, on their day, they do give a good fight and a good match, and they do play some really attractive football at times. So it would be a shame to lose them from the league, especially given their history here as well. So I would like to think that they can keep themselves up. And I do think that it's just a matter of time. I don't necessarily think that, you know, they need wholesale changes in their squad. I just think that they just need to play their way out of it, really. And it's difficult to say that when you're in that situation, for someone to say to you, oh, just play your way out of it and just, you know, perform better. But, you know, it's a platform for them to be able to build on. And, you know, you have to be able to take the hits of a 5-0 loss like this or something like that, and, you know, pick yourself up and build on it and, you know, use it for the better. Learn from it. Don't sit and dwell on it. So I think they've got the opportunity to be able to, you know, hopefully it'll be a defining moment for them where they can now turn around and go, look, we really need to just pull ourselves together and get back to basics here.
I mean, it did. I mean, the style of play was quite reminiscent of Chelsea some years ago. Lots of falling over on the pitch and claiming fouls, which, you know, didn't seem to be quite as bad as they were making them out to be. So you can see that kind of Frank Lampard influence, I guess, in that way of playing, which of course worked quite well for Chelsea for a period of time. But obviously he's still got to build something with this Everton team. He's still a new manager. Of course, the Spurs fans last night quite enjoying, particularly after his comments, I think, talking about 3-point lane before the game. And then we were able to have the last laugh, I think.
Yeah, I've got to admit, it was from a fan banter perspective, where it is just lighthearted banter, it genuinely was. I don't really like the word banter, but I think it's the only way to really describe it, because it was all tongue in cheek and it was all aimed at Frank, and he bore the brunt of it. And you know, we had a good chat. My season ticket is above the away fans. So we had a good back and forth for a fair while in there, and there were a lot of light-hearted sort of chances doing sports together. And it gave it a good atmosphere, and it got the crowd up. And you know, I'm all for that in a positive and not in a divisive manner. But it was all very lighthearted, and you know, the fans took it well. I know they left in their droves quite quickly, the Everton fans, but the ones that stayed, they took it quite well.
Yeah, well, they had a long way to go home. But it's I think that it's one of those difficult things, isn't it? Drawing that line between what is acceptable haranguing of the opposition and what is unacceptable. And I think that line is quite difficult to draw, and even more difficult to kind of convince a stadium of. I think a little bit of that kind of back and forth is can be good natured, and as you say, I think it was. And if the managers from the opposition is going to come out and make a statement like he did before the game about, you know, giving as good as he knew he was going to get, potentially, I think, you know, you're opening yourself up to it. And I think, you know, you should expect that response. If he'd not said anything at all disrespectful before the game, then there's a different argument. But, you know, he laid the foundations for that, I think.
Yeah, and reap what you sow with that.
Yeah. But thankfully, we've got a couple of away games now, and a couple of tough games coming up. So we've got Manchester United at the weekend, who, of course, aren't looking terribly good themselves at the moment. They're another team that are kind of doing a Jekyll and Hyde situation of good games and bad games. What do you think? I mean,
These next three matches that we've got, so we've got United at home, away at United, away at Brighton, and then at home against West Ham.
Yeah.
And the first and the latter of them three matches, so Man United away and West Ham at home, there's no understating how important they're going to be in determining where we finish our season here. And if we genuinely want to be able to get up to fourth place, those two matches are must wins. If we win those, I know it's a big if, but if we can get 6 points from Man United and West Ham, then there's no reason why we can't be finishing fourth. Having said that,
well,
Brighton away is not an easy match either.
I mean, the reason would be it's not within our own hands. Obviously, Arsenal have got themselves in a better position than us at the moment, and if they can go on a winning run, then there's nothing we can do to stop them. But we know that Arsenal are still, you know, again, a side of differing fortunes with lack of strike power at the moment. So we wait and see. You know, our form and their form are going to be important, and the games against Manchester United for us and West Ham are important. I think we've got fairly similar run-ins for the rest of the season. They've not got an easy rest of the season. And, you know, and the team, we both got to play Aston Villa, who are looking, you know, like they're a team with some power behind them at the moment. Stevie G's doing a great job, that job there. So it's going to be really interesting. And it's that Spurs thing again, isn't it? We'd all written it off. We were all like, that's it. No, we can't get fourth place now. Conte said we're not going to get it. We can't get it. And then Manchester United and West Ham lose, we beat Everton, and all of a sudden we're all hoping again.
It's that roller coaster, Sean. It's that roller coaster, and we all love the ride to an extent. Everyone enjoys the, oh, can we get it? No, we can't. But can we? No, we can't.
Sure? Well, the trouble is, it's also now that roller coaster is also tied in with the will Harry Kane stay roller coaster. And the two are kind of inseparable.
And also will Conte stay poster as well.
Well, yeah. Well, and then throw into the fact that the media are now saying Poch wants to come back this summer, because we know he's not happy in Paris. And I guess better the devil you know, maybe. But
where do you stand on, say Conte does walk in the summer, where do you stand on Poch returning?
Well, given that nobody else seems to want to come to us, I mean, maybe it's been, I don't know. I mean, things have moved on a lot, I guess, haven't they? I'd love to see Poch back at some point.
I don't think we've gone through our painful rebuild that he spoke about. I don't think we've quite gone through that fully yet. Yeah.
But maybe Levy's ready to listen now. Maybe, you know, I mean, I think, well, that's going to be the question, though, in terms of whether Conte stays. Because although I think that whole Conte thing has been a creation of the media, largely, I think that's about a lot of people in the media who don't want to believe that Conte wants to stay at Spurs. And actually, I think Conte knew what he was getting himself in for. If he didn't, he was an idiot. And I don't think he's an idiot. You know, he knew the situation. He's watched managers before him and the problems that they've had. So I'm quite disappointed if he did go in the summer, to be honest with you, because I think that would be kind of admitting that he'd not really known what he was getting himself in for, because there's no surprises in what he's seen this season. If you
and
know,
he's always maintained that it's not something you can come in and fix overnight. It takes time. It takes seasons. So he's always had that air of expectation that it's not an overnight fix, and he knew that.
And he knew that the January transfer window was going to be limited, and the expectation was that the summer one was where it was going to be at. So,
and that's why he had the length of contract that he had is what we all suspect, and you know, would make logical sense. You know, you give him a January transfer, a summer transfer, and then another January, and then at that point you'd then expect to see consistent improvement. And if you're not at that point, then you know maybe the manager's not what the club needs. Arguably, that's not necessarily true, but from a contractual perspective of what Levi would have been looking for when he brought Conte in, that's what the expectation would be.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Conte is probably what we need. He seems to be more aligned, kind of from a perspective of his approach to playing and his approach to man management than say Jose was. He's obviously a better caliber of coach than Nuno, so I think he's the best we're going to get at the moment, and I think keeping hold of him will be important. But I do think that if he does leave in the summer, that will say as much about him as it does about the club, given it's no surprise to anybody the situation that we're in. If you're, you know, if you've been following Spurs for any period of time, no surprise to anybody where we're at now. In the men's team, and I think I would be surprised if he did leave, because I don't think he's that short-sighted, unless the Man United job went, but it doesn't look like they're looking elsewhere, it would seem.
Or unless he feels like he doesn't have the backing of the club in the way that he was expecting to. That I can see being a reason why he would want to leave. I don't think he would leave because of it, but I can see he'd probably use that to his advantage, the fact that he'd almost have leverage over the club, saying, well, I was expected to get this amount. Unless you can provide me with what I need, I'm not going to be able to perform. And we've seen it before with managers where they make some very object tactical decisions around playing certain players in certain positions that aren't usually playing in those positions, sort of to make a point about the recruitment. And you know, there's ways to say things without saying it. And I think should he feel like he's not getting the better end of the deal from what he was expecting, he is intelligent enough to be able to do that sort of thing, to make the statements without making the statements.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've got to wait and see and try and avoid this media roller coaster. But as ever with Spurs, you know, there's some kind of roller coaster, and the media do seem to like toying with the Spurs fan base more than they do with others. But I guess we make that easy for them in many ways.
Just side note to that as well. I was thinking about this the other day. How long has it been since Spurs have played a home kickoff on a Saturday? Because all of our matches either get picked for TV rights or whatnot. Last time that we had a home match on a Saturday at 3 o'clock, I think it's been a year and a half.
well, it was the the European competition didn't help this year, did it? Because of Thursday games mean a lot of your weekend games get pushed to Sunday and things. So yeah, it's been a long time. It's very annoying when it comes to supporting both the men and the women. Because if you end up playing on Sunday, there ends up being lots of clashes.
Yeah, so you know, there's definitely something in there about the amount of media retention that Spurs get, and whether it's positive or not. I know a lot of fans think there's a media agenda against us. I don't quite think it's at that point, but I do think that there is an element of people enjoy, because we always have hope. People enjoy the seeing hope dashed. And
yeah,
there's no easier target than someone who is regularly getting their hope dashed and is very vocal when things are going well, which we tend to do. So,
well, I think probably, if you talk to fans of other teams of a similar caliber, they would probably, because obviously we notice in the media stuff it's about Spurs and a bias perhaps one way or the other, more than we would if it was about another similarly sized team. So probably you'd find a lot of other clubs think that the media have got a bias against them, unless you're the obvious examples. So it's difficult to say, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, our fan base plays along with the excitement of it all, and the you know, the fact that one game to the next, we're playing terribly or we're playing brilliantly in the minds of the fans, if not even in the results, you know. So I think give it a little bit of time till the end of the season. We've got, what they're saying, 12 games now till the end of the season. Is that, am I correct in that?
For us anyway, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that's still actually quite a lot of games. Still quite a bit of time to for everything to change 3 or 4 times, if not 12 times. So we've just got to keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best and see what we can do, see where we can go. But if we can keep playing the way that we've played against Leeds and the way we've played against Everton, then things are looking bright. But obviously they're not the best teams in the league at the moment. They're both teams that are struggling, and we were able to take advantage of that. So as you say, these next 3 games, and as we were saying actually earlier on, prior to this conversation, you know, that remaining game against Arsenal will be key as well, because, you know, depending on the form of the two teams, could be a big decider in who gets that top 4 spot.
I think, I don't want to say that we're guaranteed European football, because we're not by any stretch of the imagination, but where we're sat in the table at the moment, so I think we're 7th. And we've still got a game in hand on the teams below us, 2 in respect to Palace, and we're still 5 points clear of that in 7th. And obviously 7th is the Europa Conference League spot. So, you know, we're looking, European competition is looking pretty good. Obviously, we don't really want to be in the European Conference League. I don't think anyone really does, but that's a whole other matter. But, you know, I'd like to think that our ambitions are better than that, and that Conte sort of made it clear that, you know, getting a top 4 for us is winning the league for us this season, given where we've been and where we've been at the parts and times of the season and what's happened over the last year or two at Spurs. You know, top 4 would feel like winning the league right now. And I think, I remember when we started the podcast this season, we was talking about what would look like a good season for us, where would we want to end? And I know that sort of as the season's gone on, we've sort of been sort of up and down and high hopes and, oh yeah, definitely should be getting top 4, pushing for higher. And then there's also been, you know, after those first 3 matches, you know, us top of the league and Arsenal bottom, you know, there was really high hopes from them. And obviously, you know, season is a long old time, and, you know, we're 26 matches in and we've got 12 to go, so 2/3 of the way there. And, you know, there are times when I thought we're not going to get top half. There have been times when I thought we were going to win it. There's been times when I thought getting top 4 is possible. And
you're one of those Spurs fans, aren't you, Lee? That
I get carried away in whatever is happening in the moment, yes.
Game by game, it changes dramatically.
The reason for that is because I like to look at it game by game. You know, if we can win this game, it puts us in a position where we can achieve it. Or when we then don't win it, we're then not in a position where it's easy to be able to achieve that. So I think, you know, because I try and take it game by game, it means that I'm looking more often than not at where that result now leaves us in the bigger scheme of things. Whereas I think maybe if you're a little bit more relaxed and you think, well, we played well, we didn't get 3 points, but we played well, and, you know, we've got next week, where you're not looking at how that's affecting the table, what's happening in the table, I think you're going to be a lot happier sort of fan if you can stay away from the table.
So that's the men and their woes. The women are didn't start the new year terribly well, but then picked up some points and then had a disappointing result this weekend. So we played Birmingham beginning of the month. Well, Brighton first, and got a great result against Brighton at home. Against Brighton, went away to Birmingham, got soaking wet. Thanks, St Andrews, for putting us in the only stand that didn't have a roof.
That was lovely of them, wasn't it?
Yeah, pouring down, only stand that doesn't have a roof, and no way of getting back to any area that did have a roof. We all got very wet. So, you know, normally it's just the players getting wet, but they had players a nice dress
for them that week.
They had a nice dressing room to go and have a shower in afterwards. We, on the other hand, had to go home wet. But anyway, we ground out the victory there and got 3 points. Then we had a couple of weeks off with an international break and the FA Cup weekend, which obviously we're not involved in anymore. And then we went to Reading on Sunday and drew with them, which... any other season would probably have felt like a great result, but this season did not feel like a great result, and we should have done better. Really, 0-0. Nobody managed to put the ball in the back of the net.
Feel like 2 points dropped.
It really does, and unfortunately, we've got a really tough run coming up. So we've got Manchester City, followed by Chelsea, followed by Arsenal. So three really tough games coming up in the next 3 weeks. So really difficult run to get any points from. So dropping 2 points against Reading, who aren't doing brilliantly this season. They're doing better the second half of the season than they were first half, but they're not the team they have been in previous seasons. And, you know, we were looking to hold on as high as we can. Obviously, we dropped down to fourth because of that result. Manchester United going above us. Manchester City still behind us, but we've got to play Chelsea twice. We've got to play Manchester City. We've got to play Arsenal in the remainder of the season. So it's going to be a tough run. And I think if we'd got those extra points at Reading, that would have given us a little bit more of a boost going into a tough run and a little bit of a difficult, second half of the season. But I'm still saying finishing fifth would be excellent for us, and we should be very happy with that. But it does feel like a little bit of a disappointment with that one. But at least we didn't get soaking wet.
Every cloud.
Yeah. but also, one really good thing to come away from February, of course, is that Ashley Neville was awarded the Barclays Super League Player of the Month for the month of February. 2 goals, 2 assists, 2 clean sheets. She's a fullback, so although she has been playing in on the right wing as well as fullback in the last few games, so fantastic performance from her, fully deserved. But the first time any Spurs player has won the Barclays Super League Player of the Month, fitting that it should be Ash, who's come with us from the Championship up into the Super League and been one of those players that's just grown with the team, and one of those players who is first name on the team sheet type players. So brilliant stuff from her. She's also been nominated for the PFA Women's Player of the Month for February as well. So get voting if it's still open. But just brilliant to see her getting some recognition and interviews with her all over the shop in the last couple of weeks, which has been lovely. Finally getting the recognition she deserves. We've been talking for a while. We just need to get that Ash for England hashtag trending now.
Yeah, and I was going to say there's a couple of the players of the week. There's been quite a few Spurs players popping up in and around them. Obviously, having a good season the way that the team are, you'd expect them to be in there. And it's just nice for the girls to get that recognition as well when they're being selected in those team of the week. It's great for morale.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things. It's a bit when team of the week's always a bit of a. You look across the some players are the same, but also then you get completely opposite players as well and things. It's always a bit of a a strange one, isn't it? Because how many games of the person putting it together actually completely botched, and it can be a bit of one person completely agrees with you, another person completely thinks you're wrong kind of thing. But the fact they're in and amongst those names and getting recognition, and so many of them, you know, both Becky and Tinny in goal, Shalina, Molly, they've both been in those lists, Rhea Percival, Rachel Williams, you know, right through the team, we've had representation in those teams of the weeks going on, and fully deserved it. You know, the team have been great, but now comes the tricky time where we've got to hold it together and we've got to keep going and finish the season as well as we can. Not quite as many games left, of course, as with the men, and we still haven't got season ticket information like the men have yet for next season. But we've got. We're away and we're playing at the Emirates Stadium on the 26th of March. So that's the first time Arsenal women have played in the Emirates in the Super League, I believe. So looking forward to that one and getting as many people down as possible to come and join in. The club have emailed about an away end just like yesterday, I think, which was strange since we've already bought our tickets. So we need to get some clarity about what's going on with that situation. But hopefully there'll be lots of us down at the Emirates to cheer the team on, see if we can do better than we did at the Hive when they got a last minute equaliser to deny us our first victory over them. Arsenal are in form this season and doing really well. But looking forward to that and hoping we can get something off them again. And of course, we've got two opportunities to take something off Chelsea, who we've never taken anything off. And if we did that this was season, we would have taken points off all the top four teams, none of whom we'd taken points off in the past. So that would make a lovely little...
what a statement that would be, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, the Manchester City game was Manchester City really below par, but you take the ones that you can get.
Same with the men's team this season. We've beat them twice and we just happened to catch them on 2 days when they just weren't clicking. But over the course of a season, it happens. And, you know, it's just great that we got to play them. And, you know, we did run our luck a little bit in that match with decisions and whatnot. And, you know, we won't go into it again.
Yep.
But, you know, the points were there and we took them.
Yeah. And it's interesting this season. We've taken our chances against the bigger teams. But it's been the other kind of middle of the table teams away at West Ham and at Brighton where we've and Reading now where we could have done better. They wore the purple kit at Reading, we think, because every time they've worn the black kits, they've lost. That's what we wore at West Ham and Brighton. So they went for the purple kit and we did slightly better than the purple kit, but still only winning. Our home record is fantastic. I have a feeling that might be coming to an end in the next couple of weeks. But this Sunday, fingers crossed, Man City are going to be out for us after that result at the Academy Stadium. And they've just, of course, won the Conti Cup, so they'll be flying high. Came back from one goal down at half-time to beat Chelsea. So really fantastic result for them in the Conti Cup. And it's going to be a tough ask on Sunday. But again, that's at the Hive. So it's a lunchtime game, 12:30. So if you're about, do come and support the women. They will need those voices. The men are away, so no home games to watch for the men. Come down and watch the women. See if we can get some more points off Manchester City.
Wouldn't that be a marvelling thing? Could we get 12 points from the matches across the men's and women's teams against Man City? I think that's one of those things that if you said that at the start of the season, that there would be an opportunity and we would be playing for the 12th point against them across it, I never would have believed. Never. Never, never, never.
Nope.
But that's said you'd be lucky if we got any points against them. Any.
Yep. No, absolutely. Although the men's team do tend to like playing Manchester. We do seem to be a bit of a bogey team for Manchester City.
It definitely is starting to show that way. So my friend, who's not a massive football fan, I've sort of been giving them the lowdown on matches that are sort of coming up and, you know, trying to say this is a match that we should win and this is a match that we should lose. And every single time I'm being proved wrong. So it makes me look like a bit of a
like you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, precisely. But you know, given the history of the Man City, I said to him that I don't think we have a chance in hell of winning this. But there's just something that's just niggling away at me that I've thought that before on many occasions now. Many, many times I've thought, you know, we don't stand a chance here. And somehow we've produced the goods every time. And, you know, clearly there's something going on with the women's team with this as well, of, you know, the expectation necessarily of getting a result against, for instance, Arsenal or City. And then, hold on, we've got a point here and we've got 3 points there. And it's like, oh, wait, hold on. Are we becoming a bogey team for other teams where they just all of a sudden don't look forward to playing us now?
I think we're a long way from that yet, but we are getting
starting to establish.
We are getting points off teams we've never got points off before, which is lovely to see. And you know, if we were then getting points off, getting points from the teams that we should be more likely getting points off, we'd be in a much better position this season. As I said before, if we'd won against West Ham or Brighton away, that would have been 3-6 points more on the table, on the board. We got those extra 2 points against Reading, you know. That's where my frustration has been this season. Yes, it's lovely getting those points against the top four when you weren't expecting to get them. But what we need to be doing this season is to push forward is to be starting to make sure we get the points against those teams, the Brightons and the West Hams, who are the teams that are going to be trying, you know, who have been kind of a comparable side with us for the last couple of seasons. So that's been disappointing to me that we haven't pushed hard on those. Although, I mean, West Ham, both games were disappointing, really, a loss and a draw. Brighton, we did then go on and beat them at home, which was a great result. They were really not ticking that day. So, a mixed bag of results there as well. But still, I mean, we're still in fourth, I think, in the Super League now. So drop down one, but it's going to be tough. So we've got Manchester City, as I say, this Sunday. Then we get a week off. And then the following week, we've got Chelsea away on the Wednesday night and Arsenal away on the Saturday. So that's the international break for the men. So the Saturday, we're playing that one. And then the following Sunday, well, in theory, the Sunday, we don't know yet because the TV fixtures haven't been confirmed for April yet. But we should be away. We should be at home to Villa before the next break in the season. And then we run on to the end of the season, Chelsea at home, Everton away, and Leicester at home to end the season. So Leicester starting to do well and beat us in the cup, obviously. So they're doing well. Everton away is going to be an interesting one. They've had lots of changes this season, manager-wise. I think they've sacked their second manager of the season recently. So we wait and see what happens there. They were tipped for great things with the players that they had, but they haven't done that this season. But I'm getting worried about how expensive it's going to be going up to Everton with it being at the beginning of the month, and we know how good they are announcing when the TV fixtures are going to be. Unlikely to be on television, I wouldn't have thought. But that doesn't mean you can book it just in case it is.
It's that age-old, you know, are fans really being listened to when it comes to ticketing and arranging for TV schedule and things like that?
Men's game, the West Ham game, just got moved the second time. So they moved it to the Sunday, which is annoying because it clashes with the women's game against Villa. And then they've changed the kickoff by 2 hours. Just 2 weeks before, and there's a lot of this not really thinking about. Actually, it's much cheaper to book tickets if you book the specific train you're going home on. So if you move it by 2 hours, that does create problems for people who've booked on a specific train. And also, I think
that there are people, I know that it's not the majority of fans, but there are still people that will be coming in sort of from around the world and maybe flying in and, you know, flying home afterwards, being a Sunday, trying to get back to wherever home is, you know, booking a flight, you know, that's not something that you can just really easily rearrange. And I imagine there's a lot higher expense of what the cost would be to transfer that to, you know, train tickets, which I know quite a few for train tickets, like the advanced ones you're talking about, some are non-refundable. And that's that. Once you book it, and that's that.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, what we need to, people, you know, the match going fans are important, you know, part of what the TV companies are buying with the men's game in particular is that crowd and that trying to convey that atmosphere, to, you know, through the television screen. And if fans aren't being taken seriously in terms of being able to get to the games, I mean, in the women's game, it's even worse. You know, we have, it's not that unusual to have 2 weeks' notice in the women's game, particularly for the games at the beginning of the month. You know, I think the FA need to decide with the women's game what it is that they're trying to sell it as, because they try and sell it as a family game, but then they have games on a Sunday evening and at lunchtime and things, which aren't really helpful for a family situation. I also think that by encouraging young children, it actually is a negative impact on the game, because it's 2 hours of football at the end of the day. And unless the child that you're bringing can sit down and watch 2 hours of football, you're taking away from the atmosphere of the game. And I love to see, you know, kids there watching the game, enjoying the game, but I don't love to see kids there who don't really want to be there.
You can see the kids that are being inspired by it, and you know, it draws them into the game, not the ones who they don't really know what's going on at all.
Yeah, and you know, there'll come a time when maybe they'll want to go to games, but they, you know, if they're of an age where they can't sit on their bottoms for 45 minutes in quick succession watching people, you know, kick a ball around, then maybe they shouldn't be there. And I think, but from the perspective of the FA, I think there definitely needs to be a cohesive message about what they're selling this product as, because there isn't at the moment. And it's primarily they talk about a family game, but then the fixtures times aren't replicating that, and you can't kind of have these two differing messages. The Football Supporters Association put out a survey on the women's game, which just closed, which will be interesting to see the results and to see what fans are saying about, you know, all these things about fixture times and things, because the women's game has kind of got a difficulty in a different way to the men's game. The men's game, the TV stuff, is kind of coming after it's got popular, and the, you know, stadiums are full for the men's games, and there's an argument to say, well, stadiums will be full no matter what happens with the TV stuff. But with the women's game, there's a much bigger difficulty in that if it's on the television and you haven't really got into it yet, you're more likely to stay at home and watch it on screen than go to the game potentially. And, you know, lots of, I mean, the Conti Cup final was sold out on Saturday, but there, apparently, from what I understand, there were quite a lot of seats empty, you know, people who just didn't turn up for one reason or another. And that does seem to happen with the women's game, an argument being that because the tickets are so cheap, people don't mind kind of waste, you know, but they'll buy the tickets and then decide they can't be bothered to travel, and they'll lose that £5-10, whatever it was that they spent on those tickets, without worrying about it too much. So I think there's a lot of work that still needs to be done to try and have a cohesive idea of what the game is, and to make sure that there's support there to grow the match going population as well, because otherwise, you know, it's not the same product in terms of seeing it on television. It's not as exciting.
Sure, the TV will draw new people in, perhaps, who maybe haven't got to experience it, and it will open it to a wider audience. But unless that audience is being converted with ticket sales on the day and gate takings, clubs aren't necessarily benefiting in the way that they should be from that level of publicity. And not to take away from people who are getting into women's football maybe for the first time. You know, it's great having it televised, and it's great having the opportunity for that, as long as it's followed up with support for the clubs to be able to get people through the gates on the day as well.
Yeah, and you know, it has an impact as well on things like player wages. As you know, Telegraph come out with an article this week about, you know, the player wages and how low player wages are in the Super League for some players, you know, as low as £20,000 in some cases. And whilst, you know, I'm not quite so dramatic about that being such a terrible wage in some circumstances, the problem is the disparity between the players in the Super League earning £20,000 a year and the players earning £250,000 a year. You know, that's a huge jump. And obviously the bigger teams are paying the wages and being able to pull in the best talent. but what does that say for the rest of the league? How, you know, how sustainable is that? And if you've not got the fans coming in through the stadium, you've not got the match day income, all of those kind of things, how are the smaller teams going to afford to increase the wages? So I think there's really interesting debates to be had as well about how the game grows in terms of player wages. Yes, the players need to be earning a decent wage, but should it be done in a way that is a more steady growth rather than having some people earning £20,000 a year and some people earning £250,000 a year for essentially doing the same job? Yes, some of them are going to be better at it than others, and there needs to be some differentiation, but it's a big one at the moment. And when the game is still growing, and you know, the grassroots stuff and the training facilities and all those kind of things aren't in place, and the match day and the, you know, the attendances aren't as good as we would like them to be, maybe the wage thing should be contained a little bit until we've grown the game enough that we can start paying those kind of crazier. And I know compared with men's, those salaries are not at all crazy, but when you think about comparatively with what Joe Bloggs on the street earns, I might well argue that, you know, in football the men's figures should come down rather than the women's, you know, and nobody's calling for the women's players to be paid anywhere near what the men's players are, but it's an interesting argument about the disparity within the league.
Yeah, and when you think of that, so that, just as an example, that's a 1,000% increase from one player to another. And I understand that different levels, obviously, and whatnot, but you know, we've seen it in other sports where they have wage caps. It's quite common in other sports where there is a cap on the amount that certain players can earn, so that you don't keep getting these glass ceilings that just keep getting smashed every single time there's a new player of quality who moves from one club to another. So, you know, there are structures in place in other organisations and other sports that have helped to facilitate growth in a positive way, where it benefits the majority rather than the minority.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, I believe there is a wage cap, but it's based on the club's takings rather than a kind of a hard salary cap. So, you know, and then there's questions again about that, because how is that determined? Because as far as I'm aware, very few, if any, of the women's teams make a profit in and of themselves. You know, the players with the big money are Chelsea and Manchester City and people who are being given that money by the men's club and have a much bigger operating budget given to them by their men's team, not because they're making that much more, although they are making more money, but they're not making that much more, they're not making enough money to cover that. So there's a lot of conversations to be had, and this is why we're pushing for a review of the women's game. Obviously, we had the fan-led review in the men's game, and the Crouch report recommended that we have one in the women's game, and we're still pushing for that to happen, and we're hoping that that will happen soon so that we can start to tackle these problems, because you've got a game that's grown kind of organically, but is now trying, the FA are now trying to kind of improve it and build on that, which is great, but it needs to be done in a way that doesn't kind of end up with a shadow Premier League and losing the identity of the women's game, which is different from that of the men's.
You want to keep that uniqueness, because that's it makes it more of a spectacle and more of an experience, and it's what drives you to go back again and again. It's why, correct me if I'm wrong, Sean, but why you try to watch the women's team more than you do the men's team, because it is that environment, it's that atmosphere, it's everything that comes with that, and not just the football itself.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I would choose the women's team over the men's team every time. And this season, I've tried to get to every women's game. I didn't succeed with a semi-final, so was a little bit disappointed by that. But other than that, I've gone to all the games, home and away, and intend to till the end of the season, unless anything, you know, terrible happens. So, which has meant that I've had to kind of miss some of the men's games. And again, that's another thing that we need to talk about in terms of a one club approach and how the teams can be working together to try and make sure that fans can watch both if they want to. But I choose the women over the men, and it is because you've got that atmosphere, and that's that also, you know, that that closer connection is still in its infancy, the women's game, and you can still go and chat to the players after the game, and you know, we sit in the crowd with their other halves and their family and all of that kind of thing, and it is, you know, much more we're in it together kind of atmosphere, and there's just a lot of fun to be had from that. And a lot of, you know, and it's interesting for me to kind of watch how that growth is happening and to try and be part of making sure it goes in a different direction from the men's game so that we can avoid the problems we've had in the men's game, because the women's game is still much more inclusive than the men's game from a fan perspective. You know, it feels like a much safer environment. It's not so tribalistic, although that is starting to creep in a little bit. And certainly we've seen some homophobic, usually kind of like one person in the crowd doing something, and at West Ham I know they've started to see some problems, and we saw some problems at Chelsea as well. So I'm not sure who was the a perpetrator in the Chelsea situation, but I know there have been some instances. So it is starting to creep in, and I think it's coming from people who've come from the men's game and they're just used to a different way of behaving at the football. And we've got to kind of find a way of making sure that that doesn't happen further, and we keep the friendly atmosphere of the women's game whilst bringing a little bit more atmosphere to it.
Definitely. And it's one of those things where once you've actually been and you've experienced it, and you know, it's I've heard people try and make comparisons with, because of the low crowd numbers, with watching like a non-league side, and it's not like that at all. I've worked at a non-league ground before, and I know what that environment's like being around the pitch side with only the same number of fans, say for instance that the Spurs women team will get at their Hive. You know, I've been in environments at men's matches with that sort of crowd size, and it's completely different to the atmosphere that you have at the women's match. And it's that essence, that beauty of it, and the like you said, the intimacy that really makes it stand out in terms of the match going experience, as well as the actual football on the pitch itself. You know, as a fan who's going to matches and who's going for the experience, that there's just something about it that's just unique to what it is, and we always want the sport to be able to stay true to what it is, and part of the match going experience is definitely something that needs to be preserved in there.
Yeah, absolutely, and we're hoping to, you know, to work on that and to make sure that it happens whilst growing the game, so that the players get the recognition that they deserve, because, you know, these are players, many of whom at the start of their career were doing a full-time job and playing football additionally. And in fact, you know, in the Championship there are still plenty of players who are doing exactly that, and that's the second tier of the game, so there's still a long way to go to get the professional status across the game, or even further into the game than just the Super League and those teams hoping to get promotion. And should mention the Championship this season is looking very exciting in terms of teams pushing for promotion. I think Liverpool will clinch it, but they tripped up this weekend, and London City Lionesses drew with them, and Bristol City won, who are the latest team chasing. So it's getting quite interesting in the Championship as well. I'm kind of hoping that it's not Liverpool that come up, simply because that would mean two trips to Liverpool next season, and that's expensive.
And timely as well.
Yeah.
February's also been a busy month for us as Proud Lily Whites members as well, because we've had our birthday month as well, which we've celebrated with a lovely Talking Tottenham with club legend Michael Dawson.
Yeah, I can't believe I couldn't make that one. I had another meeting that evening, and I was toying with the idea of having two screens, but I was just feeling I couldn't cope with that. So how was it?
Yeah, it was really good. It was really it was so intriguing to be able to listen to him speak and the passion, and that clearly Spurs have a special place in his heart. And it's just really good to, you know, hear from him as well, because obviously he's now gone into doing commentating and stuff as well with Sky. So it was really interesting to hear from him from a perspective of going into commentary, where, you know, you need to not be biased, but also you want to show your emotion, and you want to, you know, they're paying you to give your opinion. They're paying you to talk about what you want to talk about. And to an extent, he wants to be able to do that. And, you know, he said that it's heartbreaking to watch Spurs this season with what's been happening. And he leaves his heart on his sleeve when he does that. And it's just really interesting to see where he's been in his career and some of the stuff that he was talking about and some of his experiences in football, and sort of like the full circle that he's had from being a young fan and young player to then playing professionally, to now coming into the world of commentary from a different perspective and being in with the fans, watching these high profile matches, knowing what it's like being a player in those moments as well. So it was really good to hear sort of some insight from him about what that whole journey has looked like for him, and you know, about some of his experiences. And you know, there were some funny old questions in there about you know, away days and stuff like that. And you know, there was a lot of positivity, and ironically as well, there was a lot of connectivity issues as well with his Wi-Fi. So we've all agreed we're going to pitch in to get him some better Wi-Fi for next time.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting with him, because obviously I remember when we signed him, and the noise was always about Andy Reid and this great player that we've been after from Nottingham Forest for a while, and Michael Dawson, some defenders coming with him. And you look back, and Andy Reid really had very little kind of resonance now in terms of looking back. He was a player who played for us, and you know, we loved him because of that, but Michael Dawson became the player that we remembered, you know, because of the smile on his face and that willingness to play and enjoy. And you know, even when he was on the bench, he was kind of the Sonny of his time, if you want, in that attitude thing. And somehow he just became a favourite, didn't he, of everybody. And the club seems to have stayed with him as well.
And he was asked about that when one of the questions that one of our members put to him was about, you know, there was this whole expectation, and you were sort of the one who was sort of alongside, and the sort of expectation wasn't on your shoulders per se, but you know, you're the one that sort of stayed along in the memory of fans, and you know, what brought you so close to Tottenham and the fans, and he just said that it was just that connection that he had, and you know, he could really feel the atmosphere, and he could really feel the crowd behind him, and he got given some really good opportunities in some of the matches. And you know, it's sort of almost circumstantial that it happened to him, but he's never sort of shied away from it. He's always put in the hard work, and he's always, you know, given everything for the badge and for the club. And he said that it's that hard work and dedication, the change of manager that he had over the years as well, you know, always trying to help him to improve, even when he thought that he was maybe at the best of his ability. You know, there were people who were pushing him on to do better, and he said it was feeling like he had that growth within the club meant that he could then resonate better with the fans, and then could perform better for us, and that we appreciated seeing him be able to perform like that. And you know, there's a few players in the club now that maybe could take Leif out of his book with that.
Well, yeah, but no, brilliant to have that opportunity to talk to Mark Dawson. Of course, we had our usual birthday message video, and this year, it being our 8th birthday, our 2 number 8s got involved, and it was great to see Cho and Winks both wishing us happy birthday, and other supporters, including, you know, our patron Helen Richardson Walsh and members of the group, talking about the importance of the Proud Lily Whites to them. And you know, 8 years down the line, I think we've done a lot of good work, but there's still a long way to go to complete our aim, which is to put ourselves out of business.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And one of the other things that we did this year was the club very kindly donated Hugo's signed match shirt that he wore in our match against Brighton. He kept a clean sheet in it as well. And obviously we raised a nice, I think we sold over £1,800 worth of tickets, which has all been raised for charity as well. So, you know, there's some real good causes in there that our members and the global fan base have really got behind to be able to help, you know, those who are in need, and be able to support those charities that we've been partnering with for that. So, you know, there's been some real positives to come from this birthday. And sure, we've definitely come a long way, and the game itself has come a long way in the 8 short years that we've had here at the Proud Elite Whites. But like you say, as long as we need to exist, there's more that we can do.
Yes, and we look forward to our ninth year, and seeing what we can do in that. Of course, a key part of that year is going to be our Proud Champions initiative. We've got some great Proud Champions already signed up and doing great things for us. I know that you and Chris did your first kind of session with them and done some training with them, and we look forward to partnering with those organisations and with any others that want to come and join us. And that's our big initiative going forward, but obviously one of many, and that's the one we're working on at the moment. But lots more to come, I hope, from us and from the club as well, who have been fantastic in their support for us.
It's a really good what the Proud Elite Whites embodies is fantastic, because it's the whole culture. It's not just putting rainbow on a stadium for the sake of putting rainbow on a stadium. It's not just these actions for the sake of actions. It's doing it because it's the right thing to do and the club want to do it. For instance, like I mentioned last time about how Chris and myself, we did some steward training, and it wasn't because there was a problem and the club were just trying to fix it. It was because the club wanted stewards to have the best understanding to be able to make the best decisions in all fans' interests, rather than because there was a problem that needed fixing or because this might be an issue. They did it because they just wanted to be able to provide a better service to the fans and to be able to make match-going fans feel more welcome and less isolated in the game, and to be a welcoming and inclusive club at all levels throughout the club. And the work that the club have done with us over the last 8 years has really propelled us to be, you know, at the forefront. We obviously were one of the nominees for the Supporters Award again this year. And although we didn't win, the fact that we received nominations for it and we were shortlisted, you know, that in itself is recognition of all the important work that goes on, not just from the Proud Lily Whites either, but from the other supporters groups as well. There's a lot of good people out there doing a lot of good things right now. And given where things are in the world right now, I think having that driving force of positivity and, you know, support, you know, it goes a long way in, and it reaches a lot of corners of the world. And I think having people like that and having them recognised for the work they're doing is really important.
Absolutely. And congratulations to those who did win. But I think, you know, I think they would agree that the work that every supporters group and every club is doing pushes each and every other group and club to do more and to be better, and to represent the LGBTQ plus fans. And, you know, hopefully, you know, one day, you know, the players as well, when they feel comfortable to make that transition. And we know in the women's game that we've already got that kind of representation and lots of out players who are shining lights and showing, you know, young women that they can be exactly what they want to be. And we look forward to the day when we don't need the Proud Lily Whites, because their players and fans and everybody in the game of football feels comfortable being who they are. And nobody is attacking anybody for anything in that, you know, other than, you know, a bit of banter about the team you support and how well they're doing.
Which we're always going to be on the receiving end of that one, aren't we?
Well, it wouldn't be Spurs if we were. And let's face it, how interesting would it be being a team that will, you know, if there any team winning everything all the time, that wouldn't be football to me. That wouldn't be interesting. And the reason we love football is because it is unpredictable, and because, you know, there's always the hope, but there's never the guarantee. And sure, you get periods of time where one club is kind of dominating, but it doesn't last forever.
Mm-hmm. We've definitely seen that over the years, and like you say, with Everton maybe looking down sooner than they are up, It also shows just how quickly, you know, if you haven't got the right things in place and you haven't got the right mentality and whatever else is going on there, you know, it's just as easy for someone at the top to be falling way down the pile a couple of seasons later.
Yeah, and you look at Leeds and, you know, how long it took them to come back up into the Premier League, and, you know, what it means to the fans that they've done it, and that, you know, and yes, it's all kind of coming apart a bit now, but they've had that great ride and now they're kind of seeing the other side of it again. And, you know, hope for those fans that the club is able to put itself back up again, you know, from the bottom of the table. But because you don't like to see anybody much going down, but obviously some people have to. But it does, you know, that ride, and that for those years where Crystal Palace were the yo-yo team who couldn't stay in the Premier League or the Championship for longer than a season, and then gradually they've cemented themselves as a Premier League side. There's, you know, it's what we love about the game, and it wouldn't be the same if we were winning all the... We'd like to think we'd love it if we were just winning all the time, but realistically... I had a colleague a few years ago when Arsenal were one of those teams that were regularly in the top four and winning things and things like that. And she just got bored with it in the end. And, you know, she started supporting a smaller team because she was just bored of the kind of constant winning and complaining if you weren't, you know, up there in that top spot kind of thing. So it does get boring if you're always up there, and that's why it's good that nobody is always up there for long. But it wouldn't be football, and it certainly wouldn't be Spurs if there wasn't something to complain about.
I think that's a lovely note to finish on there, Sian. Oh, well, thank you for joining us again. You've been here with Lee.
And with Sian.
And we'll catch you next time.